FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. Today is February 21st, 2017. And, well, looks like gold and silver are holding steady, perhaps getting ready to break out. That's why we're going to Ned Schmidt of the Value View Gold Report and the Agri-Food Value View to find out more. Ned, welcome back.
How you doing today, Gary?
All right. So, gold, it looks like it's holding steady. You know, in December, it broke 1,200, but quickly snapped back. And silver is right at that $18 per ounce mark. So what do you make of it?
Well, there was almost universal acceptance of the idea that when the Federal Reserve raised rates in December, gold was going to $900 and the stocks were going to crumble and all that. And that's totally not what happened. In other words, since the Fed raised rates in December, the gold stocks are up 20%. Gold and silver is up 6.5%. And I contended at that time, and anybody that's an old geezer knows that when you raise rates, it's bad for stocks. So let's see, GLD is up 6.5. The S&P 500 and the Dow are up 3.5. Raising rates is bad for stocks, and you need to own the alternative. The only stock part of the stock market that's done well is the NASDAQ 100, which is the speculative frenzy of this era, and it's going to become painful. Now, one of the problems that people have when they look at gold and silver now is they pull up their chart and they see all this overhead resistance above 1250 to 1375. They see that as massive resistance for gold if it tries to go up. But what we need to realize is that what appears to be overhead supply does not exist and that it was already liquidated. Last summer of 2016, the large speculators and trying to get anything useful out of the commitment of traders report every week is painful, but about every 10 years it's a useful exercise. The net long position in gold futures hit 300,000 contracts. By beginning of this month, or in the middle of last month, I guess that's what it actually is, that position was down to 95,000 contracts. Two-thirds of the net long position by large speculators was liquidated. So that overhead supply does not exist. You need to pretend like it's not there because it's not there. Okay, that means that what appears to be overhead resistance on the chart isn't there. What you now have at about the 1250 area, you've got gold's 200-day moving average and where this resistance appears to exist. In other words, it's not going to take much to push that up. And if we look at silver, silver's the one that's been giving hints of higher prices all along. That net long position got to 95,000 contracts. It is today at 85,000 contracts. We've had a minute liquidation in silver, which tells us that somebody is bullish silver. And silver keeps giving us these hints. It will trade up intraday, and then gold will follow a few days later. So it looks like somebody is using silver to hedge their stock portfolios because they know that there's going to be a problem in the stock market. So I think silver is telling us where the road is going. And on an intraday basis, which I know most of us don't trade intraday, but anything in the 1825 to 1850 on an intraday basis is getting to mean that gold and silver are going to move higher. And what that's going to be, if you look at the news, the presumption has been that there is nothing Trump or the rest of the world can do that can stop stocks from going higher. Well, I assure you, there always is. Otherwise, if that wasn't true, Carrie and I wouldn't be doing this. We would definitely be doing something else.
So Trump, you don't think he could just keep the market going higher indefinitely, huh?
For a guy not even trying to get stocks higher, I mean, he said during the campaign he thought they were overpriced. So whatever he does, the talking heads on television can twist it into something good for stock, you know? The world will end tomorrow. What do you buy?
Contrary to popular opinion, huh?
And I think the other thing is, it doesn't take much of an analyst, as we all read more than we should read anyhow. There's no bearishness out, no bullishness out there on gold and silver. You got a couple journalists that have to write a story every day, and gold and silver is their niche. But the universality of the bullish stock market story and no interest in gold, I still think it points to them having some merit. And the other thing is, Kerry, since the middle of last summer, we haven't talked about one fundamental fact in that whole period of time. I mean, fundamental economics, what's going on actually in the world, has been totally forgotten. When was the last time you had a serious conversation, Kerry, about the trade deficit?
We have a trade deficit? I wasn't aware.
Yeah, right.
What trade
Nobody
deficit?
Nobody even remembers that we have one.
God, I forgot all about it. Thanks for reminding me and ruining the party.
What about the federal government's deficit, Kerry? How popular a story is that one?
I thought they solved the problem. Didn't Obama take care of that?
Yeah, and we have the same picture, Kerry, in the gold stocks, in the ETFs. Both of them are right at moving average, 200-day moving average. It doesn't take much. It's not going to take much to get those above their 200-day moving averages and moving higher. The reports that have come in from these companies have all been good, are going to get better, one or the other. So fundamentally, as companies, you can't be critical of them right now. So the gold stocks look poised to go higher. There's nothing to make them go down. And for a lot of people, they talk about the dollar. And, of course, you and I have talked about that dollar's index before, how useless it is. I track 13 currencies. I run through a statistical model every week. The value of that model is that we can rank them in terms of their strength. In other words, which is really the strongest currency and which is really the weakest currencies. Well, of those 13 currencies, 8 of them are stronger than the dollar. The U.S. dollar comes in now at number 9, and it's been gradually weakening for some time. The two strongest currencies are the Russian ruble and the South African rand, followed by Australia. It wasn't too long ago, Australia, everybody hated it. And so the only weak currencies left, weaker than the dollar, are the Mexican peso, the euro, the pound, and the yen. And so that really is just the trading basket that the street wants to trade. It doesn't have, so the dollar really is not strong. And of course, if we ever talked about fundamentals again, we'd find out the dollar shouldn't be strong.
Right.
So I'm really excited about gold and silver at this point. I don't see how we can get through the next year with 3 rate increases where gold and silver don't do better in the stock market. Because the mathematics of the stock market is stocks go down when rates go up.
Yeah, always been that
That's
way.
That's a fundamental rule, just like gravity.
Yeah, yeah, it's always been that way since I can remember.
And we got another positive picture in agriculture, Kerry.
Mm-hmm.
And about a year ago, we started, if you back up a year, for a year and a half before that, for 1 to 3 years before that, we had nothing but bad news on supply. The U.S. Department of Agriculture issues something called WASDE every month, World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates. And every month, those things were bad news for grains, Last summer, we started to see voracious demand for U.S. grains, and it's just been stronger and stronger than anybody recognized was going to happen. Now, 3 months ago, we got the WASDE that would be for December, and everybody was expecting another bearish report. It wasn't bearish. There wasn't an ounce of bear food in it. January, there's got to be bear food in this one. No bear food. February comes out. Not only was there no bear food, but there was some hay for the bulls. So what we finally got is a change in the taste of the news. The news in agriculture had been negative for 2 years, and it stopped being negative. So we've got a change in the trend in the news to a more favorable outlook.
Right.
At the same time, we saw massive lows last summer in the grains. Mm-hmm. And in October, my agri-food price index hit a bottom, and it's up 27%.
Wow.
From that October low. The average, I follow 18 commodities. The average commodity is up 29% from the low of last summer. In other words, 26. I'm sorry. We take the rise from their lows of every commodity I follow, the average is up 27%. If we use that 20% rule, which not worth arguing about, that's a strong move in the market. Now, let's look at the individual commodities. If we look at the individual commodities, 11 out of 18 are 61%.
Wow.
Of those commodities are up more than 20%. I think that if we were looking at a stock market and I told you that 61% of the stocks were up 20% or more, you'd agree that it's a bull market.
Yeah.
And so I think it sure appears like we've got an unfolding bull market in agri-commodities. Now, the three big ones, these are the three that the street thinks it knows something about. It doesn't know anything about them, but it thinks it does. That's wheat, soybeans, and corn. All three of those commodities in the cash markets are now above their 200-day moving averages. So there's a strength developing in those three commodities that can only come because of strong demand. Like wheat prices are up 24% from their lows.
That's amazing.
Soybeans are up 16 and corn is up 13. Now, those three are the trigger because those are the three that the street looks at. So it doesn't take much in soybeans or corn for us to get those through all three of those up 20% or more from their lows. So that would turn the street positive. But the street has been subtly moving toward these stocks. From a year ago, the ag stocks are up 29%. The NASDAQ composite is up 28%, and the S&P 500 is up 22%. So the ag stocks have been putting in a strong year, and that's not really surprising because on a 10-year basis, the ag equities have done 8%, and the S&P 500 has done 5%. So this is a long-term group that went through a cycle. It's now coming out of that cycle, and the stocks are recognizing it. I mean, Deer and AGCO are two stocks that they act like they're growth stocks the way they've been chasing them. Mm. The problem we got, Kerry, is there are just not a lot of alternatives.
Right.
The money that's going to flow into these stocks, there's just a few handful of them that you can go into. And the easy ones have been run up, like AGCO and Deer. Fundamentally, the two most attractive are for most investors is ADM and BG, Bunge. Now, Bunge has had a strong pop here because they had great quarterly earnings. ADM seems to be the one best positioned for the average investor. For those of you that are a little more longer term, JBSAY is the ADR for JBS out of Brazil. And this is the world's largest animal protein company. And they are restructuring. They're going to put all their international meat companies into a single company, which will have primary listing on the New York Stock Exchange. Well, I say New York. I don't know if it's which market, actually.
Uh-huh.
So that stock has very attractive potential, as it'll be the only global animal protein company trading in a major market.
Right.
So this is one. And they just named the independent directors for the new company. And I don't have a list of them, and most of us wouldn't recognize them. But if we look at their backgrounds, there are some strong fund managers that are involved in this. And while half of us don't like him, John Bonner is going to be one of their independent directors. And he probably has very strong government contacts.
Right.
So that's one to look. Another one is Wilmar International, which primary trading is in Singapore. But we have an ADR that trades in the United States, WLMIY, and they just reported a bang-up quarter. This company is the major food supplier to Asia, especially in China, in palm oil, sugars, other oils. And so Wilmar is just going to sit there offshore and sell palm oil and sugar and soybeans and whatever else to the Chinese and probably get rich doing it. So those are the ones I would look at. But I would say ADM is probably the one closest to most investors right now to be of interest.
Right. Interesting. Wow.
Did I leave anything out, Kerry?
I think you got it there. Wow, that's amazing. Huh. It's all happening pretty fast, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. And one of the things that people don't look at as much is the character of demand for commodities. People do not buy a bushel of wheat as a collectible. If they buy a bushel of wheat, they're going to eat it.
Yeah, of course.
And it disappears.
Yeah,
you know, I'm not going to put a barrel of corn in my basement. You know, it's not going to happen. Right. The other thing is that China is changing the whole character of its ag policies. And they are, I don't want to say they're throwing in a towel, but they're throwing in the towel on self-sufficiency. In other words, they're changing farm policy to accept the fact that they are a high-cost producer.
Right.
And it makes more sense to build electronics factories than it does to try and help somebody grow corn. And the other thing is on the metals, people do buy gold and silver as collectibles.
Yeah.
And they're not going to sell it. I mean, I've never met an individual collector that ever sold a gold coin. Have you, Kerry?
No, nobody.
Never in my life. Mm-mm. When they buy one, it goes somewhere to be hidden for their kids to figure out what to do with. And so the demand in these groups is far stronger than people understand.
Yeah.
That's about as bullish as I can get, Kerry.
That sounds pretty darn bullish there, Ned, for sure. More bullish than for quite some time. And last year was really a pretty bullish year until December came along. So what happened, Ned, in December to drive down the price of gold and silver the way that it happened?
I think there was a lot of people that bought into this concept that the sole determinant of the dollar's value is interest rates. In other words, the presumption is that if dollar interest rates went higher, people are going to move money to the United States. People don't move money like that. In other words, Joe O'Malley in Ireland, that's got $100,000 in a CD or $100,000 in euro, he's not going to suddenly move that $100,000 to the United States for a quarter of a point in interest rates.
Yeah.
There are other things happening. In other words, our merchandise trade balance is negative $750 billion a year. So we're forking out $750 billion a year for televisions and automobiles. You can't offset that in the short run, I mean, over time. So in the real world, money does not respond. And the Street's argument was it does. The only thing that matters on the value of the dollar is interest rate. And so people bought into this. Or in the short run, the Street can move money in size into the futures markets and have a tremendous impact in the short term. So like gold underperformed toward the end of last year. That was the reason. But silver didn't respond. And so there's a lot of people that bought into that. And then the Street moves money into the futures market in mass. And it can have a big impact short term. But over the long term, our $750 billion trade deficit has a far bigger impact. I don't know if I answered your question or not.
I think I got it. Yeah. So I think
there was
got
some
it.
Rambling. I admit there was some rambling going on there.
Yeah. No, kind of makes sense.
Scratch that sheet.
No conspiracy to bring down the price of gold for the end of the year to make it look like it performed less than the stock market?
I don't know how much of that camp I'd be in. Now, I don't think that presumes that they're more smarter than we give them credit for.
Well,
no, I think at the end of the day, they go to the bar and check how much commissions they made that day. I don't give them that much credit. I'm sorry.
That's interesting. I find it fascinating, but you just never know what these guys are capable of is the thing.
Well, if you look at the couple of instances where it appeared some salesmen or brokers were trying to, and I hate using this word, manipulate to me, it just looked like old-fashioned screw your customer.
Yeah.
You know, can I say that word?
Is that what they do? But they do such a thing.
It just looked to me like old-fashioned screwing your customer, which has been known to happen over the years.
Yeah, we've seen such things, haven't we?
That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. And if it's not one thing, it'll be another thing.
Yeah, well, we've definitely watched them pull this stuff before. But in the long run, how much can they really manipulate?
For that single customer, it can be a lot.
Yeah,
I don't know how much
the market.
On a world basis, it matters.
Yeah, the world, yeah. But for a single customer, yeah, they can really screw them good. But in the world market, how much can they really do it? Yeah. They can, yeah, it depends how badly they want to do it, right?
Yeah, and look at how much money, how much the ruble is appreciated.
Yeah, I noticed.
And how much Putin is, how much he's worth. One of the best things that could happen to you is the U.S. get mad at you, put sanctions on you, and then take them off.
Yeah, isn't that great?
I mean, nothing makes you richer like than U.S. sanctions.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
Oh, well.
Well, you know, like, or have the U.S. beat you in a war, and then they'll pay you to rebuild you.
The Mouse and Roared. I saw that as a rerun the other night on television. You ever see that movie?
No, I didn't see that.
Uh-uh. Oh, yeah, actually, it's a movie from the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
It was about a country that decided they were having economic troubles, so they decided declare war on the United States. Because that was a sure way to get rich.
Yeah. Sure way to solve all the economic ills.
That's true. Everybody gets rich, and we get mad at.
Oh, hey, I meant to say, by the way, any questions, comments on this interview or others, just send me an email, KL@CarrieLutz. That's KL@CarrieLutz. Ned, your sites again are, got to remind me.
TheValueViewGoldReport.com and AgraFoodValueView.com.
All right.
Be glad to send out a sample to anybody in crisis.
Excellent. And we will have a link to your publications on our site, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Our Twitter feed, if you care about such things, is @CarrieLutz. Our Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. And by the way, if you want to subscribe to the show through iTunes, so it automatically gets delivered to the program. You don't have to go searching for it. You don't have to go to the website or any place else. It just gets delivered either to your iPhone or your computer. Just go over to the iTunes store, type in Carrie Lutz or Financial Survival Network, and then click the subscribe button. It'll automatically come to you. It's that simple. Ned, it's always a pleasure speaking with you. Just go over to Ned's sites, one or the other. You'll find him there and get a free copy of either one. Check it out. It's valuable information. We'll talk to you again soon, my friend. You be well.
All right. Talk to you later. Have a good day.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.